Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for entrepreneur, the founder of Southern Lee Simon Clothing and Cosmetics, Byron Simon. Byron, welcome.
Hi, nice to meet you, Eric.
Oh, man, I'm really excited to have you here. We just found out that you are extended K the family by way of Kyle Elmendorf.
Yes.
And he's going to find out when he sees this. So, yeah. Hi, Kyle.
Hi. I'll see you in class tomorrow.
Yeah, so that's really awesome. So we're really grateful that you're here. And when I got your email, as all the cold submissions do, it came to me left field. But as I'm reading through this, I'm like, okay, young entrepreneur, ambitious, wants to help other people, all these things. I was like, wow, you tick every box of people we like to talk to. So absolutely, I'd love to talk to you. So welcome.
Hi, nice to meet you. I'm really glad. I get very nervous applying, so when you guys responded, I was like, oh, I'm really glad that, like, someone understands the message.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, like I said, so many of the things that it seems like you've encompassed in your short time now already tick so many of the things that we like to do around here. So why don't you, as we ceremoniously do, press rewind for me and take me back to where some of this creativity or this desire to design things or be your own thing, when does this start to become something that you get your way into?
So I actually started designing as like a fluke. I was in FFA. It's a club at school. And I had started designing because we needed advertisements for meetings. And then over time, it kind of just became something. I was like, oh, this is really fun. Like, it's really easy for me to do. And then it wasn't until, I've told the story 1,000 times, but it wasn't until I was talking to one of my eye teachers. We were on a trip. It was at State Convention in Orlando. And his name is Mr. Wheeler. Shout out to you, Mr. Wheeler. And I was ranting to him that I want to be a fashion designer because I've always just found fashion so captivating. And makeup's actually always been the goal, but makeup's extremely expensive to manufacture.
Mm.
So, like, fashion seems a lot more easier for you to get my foot in the door, and then makeup can be a future dream.
Mm.
And I was ranting to him because clothing is just as expensive to make. It's super expensive to, you know, manufacture gowns and stuff.
Right.
So I was telling him, and he was like, well, why don't you start with shirts? And I was like, well, shirts are, like, not really what I want to do. And then he had said, like, the golden piece of advice I've ever gotten, which was Louis Vuitton didn't start with $1,000 bags. And when I heard that, I was like, okay, we got something here. So I literally went back to the hotel room that night, sketched up my first design, and then 4 weeks later, my first collection came out, which was really bad. My first collection was terrible. But it was a foot in the door, and then from there, it's just been a giant ball rolling down the hill where we are now.
So your initial vision that you had was you thought you needed to do something couture fashion, gowns, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you still want to do something like that, or ultimately? No.
It's very something like I see is it's very beautiful and I love watching it. Like the Met Gala is happening today in the car. I was like, oh my God, look at all the looks. But no, it's just something that I feel like there's so many people in it. Like the pot's so full. I'm like, I don't feel like there's really room for me in there. And it's also not something that I feel like I can really bring the most to anymore. I feel like I have a lot more fun and more expression through shirt designs, which I know a lot of people don't really get because it's like something like people are very surface level with.
Right.
But I like to dig deeper because it's an untapped market there. So I feel like very connected to that. And I feel like that and makeup's kind of where I want to be eventually. I like to go into fragrance. I find I'm very like huge on perfumes and stuff. But I mean, as it comes to couture, I mean, maybe one day if it really feels like something I'm itching for, but as of right now, it's kind of like something I'm like, let's leave that in the past and we'll come back one day.
Right. So you said when you went back and you drew up your first piece, do you have like, were you trained in drawing? Do you have a passion for drawing, or that was just something it was like, hey, this is what I got to do. Here I go.
Yeah, no, I'm horrible at drawing. I have sketchbooks from my sketches for designs and they're so messy. But because when I'm sketching out designs too, it's very like, there's a lot of terminology in design I had to learn. I look back and I'm like, I don't even understand how I've learned this much in the short 2.5 years, but usually it's a lot of like footnotes and like, you know, random words that tell me what I need to do when I go back through.
Mm-hmm.
But like to someone else, they have no clue what it's saying. But to me, it's like, I see the vision. I don't know how to explain it, but I had this really weird, like I call it my superpower. But whenever I think of a saying, cause the saying comes first for the shirt. Whenever I think of the saying, I immediately in my head know what I want it to look like, but it's one of those where I don't know when it's done until it's done. Like I don't really know what it is until I see the finished product. I'm like, oh, that's it. So, like, know how most artists have a trouble where it's, like, they don't know when to stop?
Right, yes.
I know immediately when to stop. I just don't know how to get there. And it's usually, like, a fun game of let's put the puzzle pieces around until we get the finished puzzle. And then as soon as it's done, I know.
Do you remember the first time you had that feeling?
Yeah, it was actually the first design. So the first design was copyrighted. So I had to stop selling it, but it said Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy. Because originally, so the reason it's called Suddenly Simon is it was originally going to be a Western brand.
Okay.
And then through a lot of trial and error, we very quickly switched that to like a very urban Gen Z style brand. But the name kind of just stuck because it was very catchy and very different and original. And everyone right. loved the logo. So I was like, I can't switch this. Logos are too expensive.
Plus, that's a whole other mountain to climb all over again.
Oh, yeah. So, I think it's very much a feeling that I love. It's like an adrenaline rush. Like, you get that design done, you immediately, like, that's the done. Like, it's the one, it's done, let's move on to the next one. But I'm also one of those people who I sit there and I will design something over and over again until it's what I want. There's designs that, I think people think I'm over-exaggerating when I say this, but there's designs that I have that are a year or two in the making. Because I'll make it, I'm like, this isn't done. And there's one in the new collection I'm working on that I think I've been working on for 2 years now. Because it was just a saying that I was like, this has to be executed in the right way because it's for global warming.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, and this is not coming out with my name on it until it's the exact way I want the story to be told.
So that's a very good thing to be able to hold on to. Do you feel like anything else gets held back when you wait for things to be just right, or it doesn't matter because something else will be just right and this one can stew till it falls into that camp?
I'd say it's like 50-50. Sometimes designs get held back. And also, I have this very big like mantra that if something's meant to be, it'll happen. And so my thing is, if a design doesn't come to life, then it was never meant to come to. And I think that's kind of how I just get when I'm in the studio. My thing is also, I'm okay with just having things sit around because there's been times where I will have an idea sitting around. I'll be like, oh, this is going nowhere. It's never going to become something. And then a year later, it became something that I was like, this is the key part of this collection. So, I do think that there's sometimes ideas are lost. It sucks because, you know, it is what it is. You can't really bring it back. But
yeah,
I think it's also that's kind of the best part of it is being messy in the studio and just letting what comes life comes to and then what doesn't doesn't.
That's interesting. So do you feel like you always had that sort of, for want of a better way of putting it, bravery in your creative process? Or is that something that you learned to do throughout coming from this first design going forward?
Oh, for sure learned. I remember in the very beginning, I was like, every design like, it has to come out. Every design.
Yeah.
And so my first collection, the reason it was pulled off the market is because we relaunched it 3 times. So the first time I launched was actually on a website. It was on Facebook Business Suite or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a start, but it wasn't the way we wanted to take it. So then I launched on Etsy, and I thought it'd be genius to launch with like, I think it was like 900 products. And it was a bunch of designs that were like, looking back, were very horrible and very mediocre. But I was like, I'm just going to make something for everyone and let's just hope that it's what everyone wants. And it was what anyone wanted. So I think it's really something that over time I was like, okay, it's okay to leave stuff. And sometimes things are left better unsaid. And also sometimes things I design that are just for me because I don't feel like people are going to connect with it. But for me, it's like, oh, this is an emotion that I felt that I want to get out. And I just need to vent it.
Right. Well, let's mission drift a little bit. Talk to me about that, about the importance of your creative process for you personally.
Oh, it's insane. I definitely think I go through like dry areas where I have no inspiration. And then the second I go through something, it's like it all just spikes right back up. And I can be in the studio for like a week or two straight, make an entire collection in that time because I have so much inspiration. And it's definitely something that I feel like it's more something I get triggered by something I hear and I'm like, oh, that's how I feel. And then I'm like, how do I turn this into my own way? Because I remember there was a quote, I think it was by Billie Eilish. I'm not sure. She's like my favorite singer. And it was, you don't have to make anything original, just make it your own.
Mm.
And I feel like there's a very big stigmatism between interpreting other people's work. And I don't really like that. So I've kind of always lived by the thing of, it's okay if this is someone else's idea. I just need to find a way to make it my own story. And so a lot of my designs, if you look, there's actually a lot of inspiration between music. I think those kind of correlate between my designs and music and collections. And so, yeah, I think I kind of just let it be. And then I see if the emotions, if it's telling the story with the way I want it. If it's not really connecting the way I want it to, then it is what it is. And I kind of just leave it because I'd rather the story be told correctly than not at all.
Yeah, right. Understood. So take me back to where you said your first collection gets pulled and you're making a little bit of a shift from the Western brand that you initially saw this. Did you ever have moments where you're like, did you have crisis of faith moments or was it always just adapt and go forward?
Oh, there's been so many moments where I was like, this is not going where I just need to quit. It's definitely the biggest issues in entrepreneurs. Like, not knowing if you need to quit or keep going. But I've always kind of lived by that thing too, is like, you have to believe in yourself because no one else is going to. Like, if you're not advocating for yourself and if you're not believing in your own vision, then you can't expect someone else to. So I very much am like, well, we're just going to adapt. And it got to a point, I think, with my second big collection, which was called About With Myself. It was like my first like real let's sit down, let's really make something that we can be proud of.
And how long after you first started did that come out?
So my first collection, which literally didn't have a name, was just called the Debut Collection. And I didn't know what I was doing then. I was 15. And I was like, let's just make something. So we made it. And then I'd say about a year later, I started making About With Myself. I took a very big gap. And About With Myself happened. And I made it during class, too. Being like a student and entrepreneur is like a very double-edged sword.
I can't imagine.
Oh, it's definitely tedious and exhausting. But it's something that I've learned to manage. And I think it's allowed me to become such a good business person because I've allowed myself to push myself to extremes that I think I wouldn't have been able to without school. It's also given me a very big understanding of the market and allowing me to connect with the people and see what they feel about it all.
Mm.
So I definitely think allowing myself to be able to touch, you know, base with the kids in my school and be like, how do you like this? And see what they think. And then if they're not liking it, then we take it back to the drawing board and say, okay, well, if the audience isn't liking it, then we can't just launch it because I like it. So, I think with, you know, being a student and all that stuff, it's kind of allowed me to. And then, you know, About Myself, it took 6 months start to finish. Making it during school, too, it was crazy. I made it during yearbook class. And I launched that collection, and that was, like, my first real, like, let's make somebody proud of it. And then it came out, and that was the first time we actually saw sales. And I was like, okay, we need to keep going. And then at that point, I was like, I'm just going to make what I want. And if no one else likes it, then that's okay because it's my art.
Right. That's a complete divergent from trying to make something someone will like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So as you're doing this, was there a particular piece or a particular sentiment that launched the Battle With Yourself part, that collection, Battle With Myself? Because that seems to be, you know, that was your first turning point. You see profit there. Was there a particular piece, like I said, or a particular turning point that made that vision come to light? Or was that all ready? Because I guess I ask a lot of creatives this. You have the idea finished, and then it's just a matter of getting it out? Or is it a matter of walking the line and letting it reveal itself to you?
I think About Myself, the first version was very much, let's walk it and let's see where it goes. Because originally it was called Insider, and it wasn't until I was talking to a kid in theater class, and I was asking some, like, dumb question. I think I was asking, if you had a documentary about your life, what would you call it? Because I've always loved, like, celebrity documentaries. Like, anytime you get to see what's behind the curtain, I've always found that stuff super interesting. And, I asked her, and she said About With Myself, and I was like, I love that name. And then by this point, About With Myself was probably 75% done. And I asked her, I'm like, is it okay if I use this? And she was like, absolutely. And so then I was like, that's the name 100%. And then I made a design that correlated with it. And I was like, this has to be, like, there's no other name I could see fitting it. Because I was at a really dark time in my life. It was sophomore year. I had just come off a really big mental health crisis. And I was like, this collection is just, it describes it. It was, because it was very messy. It was very, you know, chaotic. And I was like, it's a battle with myself. These are all thoughts that were conflicting inside my head. And that also kind of correlates to how it kind of just came out on its own. I didn't, like, force it. I think nowadays we plan ahead a lot, so I kind of force collections. Back then, I didn't think it was going to go anywhere. I was like, I'm going to put this collection out, no one's going to buy it, and then we're going to wipe our hands, be done. And because we made a deal, me and my mom did, that if after About With Myself came out, it was nothing, then we were going to call it quits there and find something else. And when it came out, it was like, people instantly understood it. And I kind of just let it pour out, and then I would show my friends, and they were all like, that's how I feel. And I was like, we finally got somewhere.
And you were doing all that distribution and all those sales through Etsy exclusively?
No, so About With Myself was the first collection to launch through a website.
Okay.
So at this point, I bought a storefront. I started making it. I had to teach myself website design. And so it was my first collection to come out through my own website. The only thing, by this point, I had started making my own shirts, but I wasn't, like, prepared for, like, any orders. Like, I didn't have anything. And I remember the first day when it came out, we had orders. I think we had like 5 or 6 orders. I was like freaking out. I thought I was a millionaire. And we got in the car and we went to a place called Rhinestone World in Lakewood Ranch. It's like a vinyl distribution center for like crickets and stuff. Uh-huh. And we spent way too much money on buying supplies. And we made all the shirts and sent them out. And we hand delivered the first six of them. And I remember like everyone was just like, I'm in love with this. Like, and so, yeah, it was definitely, I mean, I also for Etsy isn't a bad, I keep jumping all over the place, but.
That's all right. We're allowed to cross timelines.
Okay, perfect. But Etsy isn't a bad place to start. But for me, it was just like, this isn't going the way I want it. Because I feel like Etsy is another example of there's too many fish in the sea. Mm. Because there's so many people in there, like a bunch of moms with crickets selling shirts. And I was like, there just isn't room for me on here. As if I want to build a name, like if I want Suddenly Simon to be a name and not just an Etsy store, then we have to have our own website. So then I was like, I'm just going to have to start investing. Because at this point, I didn't want to invest any money. And at this point, I was like, I don't care how much it costs. We're just going to put it all out. And if it fails, then it fails.
And you're how old at this point?
I'm 16.
Okay, so you've had you're still very green in this game.
Oh yeah, I mean the most I remember is like we had sat down with an accountant. He kind of told us like register for an EIN, and like that was he was a handshake, and we were on our way. Like there wasn't much. I barely knew what I was doing then. I didn't understand anything about business. I definitely think I have a deeper understanding, but there's definitely so much more I need to learn.
Well, then that begs the question, why were you so passionate about doing this legit out of the gate at such an early age and not thinking to yourself, I can just make T-shirts on a cricket and hawk them out the trunk or whatever?
I don't actually know. I think it was just something that I was like, I'm so happy doing this. I feel like I can finally build a name for myself doing this. So let's just commit to it and see where it takes me. And for a while, I didn't think it was going anywhere. I really was like, this is probably not going to go anywhere. I just need to let it go. And there was a little bit where I was like, okay, it's time to wrap this up. And then it was my 1-year anniversary dinner being in business. And it was at Beef O'Brady's. We had like rented out the little side room. And I remember like a bunch of people came and I was like, this is why I do it. Like seeing these people come and they're like, their passion for it is what gives me my passion for it. And so then after that, I was like, it was just a ball rolling down the hill. And I was like, I'm just going to keep going no matter how hard it gets. And then I got to a point where I was like, I love doing this. This is like, I can never imagine my life any other way.
That's an incredible gift to have that feeling early on in life. Some people search for that forever.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So you get these first five or six orders and you've hit millionaire status officially.
Yeah.
what's kind of the next thing that happens after that?
So what people don't know is actually A Battle With Myself Deluxe, which was my follow-up collection of that, was actually made at the same time. I made A Battle With Myself. It was 60 designs. And my mom was like, Byron, your first three launches didn't do anything. Why don't we split it in half and we'll see how it sells? And so when the first 30 sold, we were like, okay, now it's time to get the ball rolling on A Battle With Myself Deluxe. And I remember like I definitely took a couple of the designs back to the drawing board. And I was like, these are a little bit dated to how I feel now. Let's update them. And by that point, I was like, let's hone in on the whole designing thing. So I started looking at inspiration behind designing, like seeing what other people were doing. And I kind of reworked a lot of stuff. And then I was like, hey, let's do photo shoots. And I did my first ever photo shoot, which was terrifying and a lot of money. And we
double terrifying.
Oh, it was crazy because first of all, I was sober and I had like a concert, a bunch of events that week. And then I got the flu the night of the photo shoot. Like right after everyone left, I had the flu. It was horrible. But I literally ended up going to a concert like 2 days later with the flu. But yeah, it was kind of one of those where once we got it going and I was like, okay, this is really good. And then A Battle With Myself Deluxe came out and we just kind of kept going from there. And the only thing I will say is I didn't have any plans. After A Battle With Myself, I was like, we'll just go from there. And then after A Battle With Myself Deluxe, I was like, oh, we need to actually plan stuff ahead.
And what made you feel that way?
I felt like I was being very slow. Because obviously there's no rush to creative processes, I feel like. But compared to like other companies, I was like, for example, like Elf Cosmetics is putting out a new product every other week. I was like, it's taking me 6 months to turn out a collection. I was like, that's not good. Because I don't know if you'll know this, but with launches, your sales spike during launches and they kind of just like slowly go down. And it's all dependent on your marketing to how long that slowdown takes.
Right.
So with me, I was like, I didn't understand anything about marketing. I would have my sales the launch day, maybe a couple afterwards, and that was it. So I was like, taking 6 months is not an option anymore. So then I started being like, let's start planning ahead and then we'll see what was going on. Because by this point, I had designs that weren't fitting in the collection that I still wanted to use.
Mm.
I was like, so let's put this into a different project and we'll just save them for later. And then that's where that whole process came out of, was me making something and being like, does this fit in the collection or no? So then from there on, we started planning all the collections ahead, and we have like the next 2 years planned out at this point.
Dang. Well, then that begs the question of all creatives. How do you handle critiquing your own work? When you're looking at a design, what makes you say, this is good right now, this can be part of the collection, or I got to stew on this one and rework it later? How do you handle the critical process of your creative process?
It's definitely something that started out very hard. Like when somebody's like, oh, I don't like that, I'd be like crushed. I'd be like, oh, my life's over. And now it's something that I'm very much like, I designed this for me, and if you don't connect with it, then that's your story. And it's something that I'm also very hypercritical of myself. I didn't know this until my friends pointed it out, but I very much one of those things that if it is not perfect, it's not coming out. And so if I'm looking at a design, I'm like, it's just, it's not. Like when I look at designs, there's like a factor I have that it's like, it either hits or it doesn't. And if I look at it and it's not immediately like, oh, I'm in love with this, then we're going back to the drawing board on it and there's something missing. And sometimes it's as simple as the color. So I started doing this thing I invented called a Tech and Masters meeting, which is where we literally go through and we, like me, a couple of like my close friends, you know, people I know that are good with designing, that kind of stuff. And we sit there and we tear the designs apart. Why is everything there and what is it doing? What story is it telling? Is there a reason it's there or is it there for fun? What color is there? Why is the color that? What story is the color telling? And if we can't find a valid reason, then it gets taken out. And my third collection, Retrograde, my third like big one, we had the Tech and Masters meeting and like I think 15 designs got cut because they were just, I remember my friend Mackenzie, she was like, why are you making this shirt? And I was like, I don't know. And then it got cut. So yeah, there's a lot of like, I don't think people understand, there's a lot of details that go into it for me to be like, oh, this is there to tell this story. And so once I was able to get that philosophy of like, no, everything I do has a reason, it made design 10 times easier because I was like, oh, if it doesn't have a reason, then it doesn't need to be there.
And that's just such an obvious criteria. It takes some of the emotion out. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, obviously there's still things I do. I'm like, oh no, I like it. I want it this way because I like it this way.
Mm.
And I think it's all, I mean, being an artist and being creative is all dependent on taste. Having good taste of something and enjoying something versus everyone else enjoying something are two very important distinctions. Because as an artist, if you are happy with what you're making and you are like, this is exactly how I want it because I like it this way, that's all that matters. But it's also something I'm like, if I'm just putting stuff on a piece of paper to say this is what it's going to look like, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
We need to have a reason and a way we do things to make sure that we're not just making things to make things.
You're right. So that is a very poignant distinction. Did someone tell you, mentor you, Sherpa you onto that road, or did your instincts allow you to come to that realization early on? Because that's a pretty powerful fork in the road to realize.
It's actually all instincts. I mean, obviously I've had like a little bit of help from people, but I'm 99% of the way self-taught. So a lot of the stuff I do now is just kind of stuff I've learned along the way and be like, well, we've made designs that didn't have a reason and they didn't sell. And people just didn't connect with them. And I look back and also, I feel like designs age very quickly. And looking back, I'm like, oh, no, I didn't like it because it didn't have a reason. But then there's some designs that I had reasonings behind what I did. And I look back and I'm like, that is one of my favorite things I've still made. There's still things in About With Myself and About With Myself Deluxe. I look back and I'm like, I am so proud of that. Like, there's one design I quote all the time, and it's about preventing substance abuse. And it's like in purple and white because purple is substance abuse awareness colors. And there's a bunch of letters and initials, and they're all like skewed and stuff. And people didn't get it. But the whole point of it was it's distorted so it looks like what someone under the influence sees. And each of the initials was a different hard controlled substance. So like there was a bunch of like little details that went into that design that people didn't pick up on. But still looking back, I'm like, I loved it, that design. The people who do understand it love it even more.
Yeah, and that's a kind of a clever thing to be in a vacuum, so to speak. Do you ever think about extrapolating those ideas into other collections and use that idea with other colors and a different idea? Mm-hmm. Or everything is kind of makes its point and you move on?
No, I pull ideas all the time, like, especially in the new collection. I'll be like, oh, I've done this before. Let's pull this idea in, or like this style and let's try it on something else. Or we've made this thing before. Let's try and tweak it because I loved it so much. And let's find a way to tell the story in a different manner. So I definitely, and also a future collection I've already started working on. There's a shirt in one of my favorite collections, Code Blue. and it's about stalkers. And I don't know if anyone knows this, but I had a stalker at one point. Like a real, like, come to your window, watch you sleep kind of stalker. It was, like, terrifying. I think I was 16 at the time. And so I've always wanted to make a shirt about stalkers. But that was one of those where it took literally years. It took, I think, a year and a half, 2 years before that design was done. Because every time I'd make it, like, I'd been working on that design all the way to a battle with myself. And every time I made it, I was like, this just isn't conveying the emotion. And then I finally made it. I was like, this is it. And so with one of those where it's like, same ideas can be pulled and used. And there's also sayings that I've written that haven't came out, but they're going to, because I just can't. Every time I sit down and think of a saying, it's the first one that comes to mind.
Mm.
Like, there's one I'll kind of tease that I've always wanted to make that says, I feel all your eyes on me. And I've always loved that. Because it was that one, and there's also one that says, nothing I do goes unseen. And I love that saying so much, because I've always kind of felt like people are always staring at me. Like, with, you know, being flamboyant and just not fitting that box that society puts us in.
Right.
That I've always kind of felt like every eye is on me when I walk in a room. And so, I mean, I still haven't cracked that design, either of those. But I know one day I will. I don't care how long it takes.
Amen to that. You just brought up something pretty poignant. Was there a time when you transitioned from feeling like all the eyes were on you in the room in a bad way to when all the eyes are on you in the room and this is something you're going to use to your advantage?
Oh, absolutely. When the business came around, I was like, oh, all eyes are on me. Let's use this for marketing now. Like, I mean, it kind of became something where I was like, I can either let their stares affect me,
right,
or I can let their stares be a thing where I'm like, they're staring at me because they're either proud of me or they're looking up to me. Or, I mean, it's all about mindset. Mr. Elmendorf taught me about this, too, all the time. He's always talking about, it's all about mindset. Are you going to let someone's stares be your own self-saboteur, or are you going to let them be a positive thing that you use to your advantage?
Right.
So you can either be in your head and be like, well, they're all staring at me because they're thinking something bad about me. But it's also the thing of, someone else's opinion about you is not your responsibility. Assumptions they're going to make because they don't know you, it's not your responsibility. You shouldn't be letting it affect you because they don't know you on a deep level. I remember it was Tom Holland said in an interview or a podcast that if you have a problem with me, call me. And if you don't have my number, you don't know me well enough to have a problem with me.
Yeah.
And I live by that all the time because I'm like, that's so true. Like, if you don't have my phone number, we haven't talked, you don't know me enough to make a presumption about me. And then I just can't let it affect me.
I love that. So do you keep that in mind? Like, I know you said a lot of your designs, you know, you're making them for you. There has to be some catharsis level to it, of course, in any creation of art. But how much are you hoping that that happens for the people that wear your garments?
Oh, all the time. When I make something, it's like 50-50. How much do I connect with this? And how much do I think people will connect with this? I mean, obviously there's designs I'm like, no one's going to connect with this, and that's okay. There's also designs I make that I'm like, I don't connect with this, but I know someone else will, and that's why I'm making it.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about.
I want someone to feel seen. I mean, I feel like for so long we're so accustomed to shirts that are so bland, and like, I mean, I've always said this, but shirts are very surface level, so are hoodies, and people don't really think about them that much. But, I mean, tell me I'm wrong, but whenever you see someone with a hoodie, you're staring at it, reading it. You're always trying to read what it says. And if it's something that you connect with, you're going to like that hoodie. And my thing is, even if I don't have the hoodie on, if I see someone wearing a hoodie and I connect with it, I'm going to feel 10 times better. There's going to be some kind of correlation or some kind of process or emotion that's evoked. And my thing is, I want someone to look at a hoodie, whether they're wearing it or someone else's, and I want them to feel emotion. And that's why a lot of my stuff is also the sayings are very open-ended or generic, because I want people to be able to apply them to their own thing. And that's why I don't talk about a lot of what my designs are about. Because, I mean, yeah, it's my story, but I want you to look at it and connect your story, not who it's about with me,
who it's
about with you.
Right. Yeah, that's the hallmark of a reasonably engaging piece of art, I guess, whether it's a garment or a painting or a piece of music.
Yeah.
So I know that you also have a component to your work where you're trying to do some advocacy and trying to help others. I mentioned that a little bit in the introduction, and I think that is beyond cool, especially since you're as young as you are. You've taken on all the things you've had. You've had all the hurdles that you have, and life will all inevitably present more hurdles. This is why we're lucky enough to all still be here. Mm-hmm. But I want you to talk to me a little bit about your nature to want to help others, your passion behind helping others, and what this has looked like so far, and where you want to go with it.
I mean, yeah, I think I'm still like trying to process what you said, but yeah, no, what you said was beautiful. But yeah, I think being someone my age and like seeing how much I've seen and experiencing what all I did.
Right.
The biggest thing I kept wishing is that someone would have like patted me on the shoulder and said, it's going to be okay. I've been through that. Here's what you need to do. And I feel like there's a lot of beautiful advocates out there, but none of them were like correlating with my age. I feel like a lot of advocates that wait till they get older to talk about it. And my thing is, I'm not going to connect with someone who's 45 talking about what they went through when they were 13.
Right.
That was 1921. Like, it was forever ago. So I like,
love that math.
It's great. I'm great at math, guys.
That's awesome. Well, I'm 45. I was 13 in 93.
You look a day over 20.
Thanks.
But yeah, no, I feel like when it's someone our age, it just feels a lot more presentable.
Yeah, for and sure.
I definitely think I realized that because I put out an article that was the hardest one I ever put out. Everyone around me knows. It's called Byron Simon, I Survived an Eating Disorder and So Can You. And I've been offered it 3 or 4 times and every time I turn it down. And I was like, I just can't do this. I don't feel like I want that to be my label.
Right.
And then eventually I got to the point where I was like, if people want to label me as that, that's their problem. I'm here to help someone. And if they want to make an issue about it, then I don't care.
So was that sort of the breaking point where you realized you could really meaningfully help other people?
Oh, yeah. And then I put the article out. I didn't think anyone had read it. And then it wasn't until a girl at my school was talking to me and she was like, that article made me feel less alone. And that like was like the most like biggest pinch me moment. Like I literally like get chills thinking about it because it's like that was like the first moment I was like someone reading what I went through helped them and they felt less alone. And now they're overcoming their own problems. And so, I mean, I've done, I think, a total of 7 or 8 articles. And every time I get offered them, I always work on them. But my biggest turning point that caused me to start doing it all was actually we lost a family friend to suicide. And I remember leaving the funeral and I was like, I have to do something about this. Like, I can't just keep sitting here staying quiet because that was the first time, I think it was 14, I realized how quickly a life can change. And we weren't that, like, I was not that close with him. But it was still one of those I realized, I'm like, this one event has caused everyone's life to change forever. And it caused mine. I still think about it all the time. And I'm like, I have to stand up and say something because, I mean, as cliche as it sounds, but like the people with the biggest smiles are literally the people who are going through the absolute worst. And it's so crazy thinking about how you never know what someone who's sitting next to you is going through. But I mean, it's something I'm like, with the voice I have and the platform, I'm going to use every ounce of it I have to make sure someone at least feels seen and heard no matter what they're going through.
That's powerful, and I appreciate everyone doing that. Do you find that it's easier to relate or get those kinds of questions or statements out there being someone your age because, well, I guess I can just leave it at that. Why do you feel it's easier being someone your age? I think I have my feelings towards that, but I'm curious how it is for you because at times it does seem like everybody wants to tell you should be heard and you can say your thing and be live your truth this and this and that until you say it and then they want to slap you down a peg for it or make you feel off for it. Do you feel like being your age and being on the inside gives you a particular way to be like, I'm not going to slap you down a peg when we find out what your warts and spots are?
Oh, yeah. I'm very grateful to be born in a generation that's less stigmatized around mental health.
Yeah.
I definitely think we shall be very lucky of how far we've come, but there's definitely work that has to be done. But it's definitely something that I feel like people need to be okay with saying, I'm not okay. And that's very something that's been said for years, but it's something that's still not being done. And it's definitely something that people feel that it's okay because they've known me for so long, or like they've seen me and they've been like, oh, well, he's fine. Then when they find out that I was going through, they're like, he's just like me. So why would he judge me? Where it's something of our elders are more of like, well, they've gone through it. They're at a different place now. They may judge me. They may think of me less. Where it's like, someone your age isn't going to think of you less because you went through the same thing they did.
Right.
So I feel like, I mean, you're right. Like, because I'm on the inside, I kind of have that benefit of connecting with people. And I think it's definitely something I want to use as long as I have the opportunity to. Obviously, one day I'll age out of it and then I'll be 86 and no one will care. But
yeah. And you would have been 13 in 1921 then,
exactly.
Too.
Exactly. But yeah, it's something that I think, while I have the ability to be able to connect with people my age, I definitely want to use, but I think it's also due to the lack of stigmatization that's happening now.
Right.
And I think it's a really beautiful, great thing. I'm very glad that we're seeing progress in that division where less people are being pushed down for what they go through, but obviously there's still people who do. And that's something that we still have to work on.
Right. And that's a big thing we're about here. And I want to ask you about this because it seems like you've empowered yourself quite a bit in life. Is that something you think you did out of necessity or you learned along the way? It's almost the same question as before, but I'm trying to get to the point where I'm curious about where you're going through all these things. You're having a typical teenage life. You're having some extraneous teenage life too. And you're saying to yourself, I'm going to start a business. Mm-hmm. What was that like? Instead of saying to yourself, I'm just going to try to hold on to my grip of reality and just try to be a quote unquote happy kid.
Well, yeah, the thing is you can either go through life or you can experience it. And going through all these events, like, for example, when I was 11, my house burned down. And I remember I tried to start a business right after that. I was going to do paintings. Mind you, I can't draw at all. So those paintings were not, there's like three of them left out in the world. If you have them, they're worth millions now. But no, it's one of those where I was like, I'm going to do everything I can to experience this life while I have, no matter how many ups and downs it has, I'm just going to go through them and take them on. And I've always had my mom, my best friend with me through it all. And I feel like that's made us also stronger together. And it's allowed us to both empower ourselves because I don't know if she wants me to talk about this, but there's just been things that like we've gone through together that I didn't think I'd ever connect with my mom over. For example, I'm very makeup, knowledgeable, and how she was raised, she never got that experience to be able to come, grow up learning how to do makeup. And since I did, because I was born into a very loving household, two amazing parents, I'm not able to go through that with her and teach her how to do makeup. And that's like something we've really bonded over. So I think it's one of those where you can either use these bad experiences to weigh you down or you can use them as motivation and empowerment to go forward.
Do you remember a specific time when you felt that empowerment or was that just always there and then it became your chance to share it?
No, it's definitely something I was very insecure for a really long time. And then eventually I got to a point where I kind of hit rock bottom. And I feel like you get to a point where you snap and there's so much negativity that then there's nowhere for else to go. And then once it all comes out, there's nothing left but a blank slate. And once I got to the point where I had a clear canvas to just see where I want to take my life now, I was like, let me just hone in on the fact that I need to love myself, love what I'm doing, and be proud of myself. And I feel like the rest followed. And I think that's something that people really need to do is, like, you have to be proud of yourself. If you're not proud of yourself, who else is going to be? Because we have to celebrate our accomplishments no matter how big or small they are. Mr. Elmendorf talks about this, too.
Yeah.
We're going to circle back to him a lot this
episode. Yeah, I love it. Oh, yeah, he's got a wonderful philosophy.
Oh, he's amazing, dude. He's an amazing teacher. So, but yeah, it's one of those where you have to be proud of yourself. Even if it's a tiny accomplishment, like, I made my bed this morning. You did something. I don't care if you wrote your name on a piece of paper. You still did something that you didn't do before. And I think it's one of those where once I started allowing myself to be proud of myself, it was one of those where the rest followed in suit where I was like, oh, I can be very empowering and push myself to enjoy the life I have. And once you get to the point, the rest kind of follows in suit and you just kind of learn over time that the reality you thought was so bad isn't as bad and as flawed as before.
Yes, I love that. I love that. Do you find yourself to be personally, professionally, or both habit-driven?
So I'd say personally habit-driven. Professionally, I wish I was. I have, like, ADHD off the wall, so that's why I'm like, all over the place. So procrastination business-wise is, like, the worst thing. It's, like, I make to-do lists every day of what I have to do in my notes app. But I think personally-wise, like, habits are something that I've really worked on developing is, like, I think this isn't talked about enough, and I really want to, like, talk about this, is when you're depressed, hygiene is the hardest thing. And I think it's something that people touch on, but, like, when you are going through it with your mental health, people do not understand how hard it is to, like, wake up in the morning, brush your teeth, take a shower. Like, that kind of stuff is so hard. And I think once I got better, and I'm still to this day working on, like, constantly building those healthy habits of, like, recently when I started trying to build in the past, like, 2 months is a nighttime skincare routine. It's, like, every night, taking the makeup off, making sure I'm, like, constantly doing the same thing over and over again. Because Mr. Elmendorf taught me this, too. It takes 28 days to build a habit. So my whole thought process is if I can push through this for 28 days, the rest will be a piece of cake.
Oh.
And it's just one of those mindsets. Like, I feel like I get mantras in my head. And once I have them, I just keep repeating them over and over again. And that's what keeps me going. And my thing is anytime I'm trying to build a healthy habit, it's like, okay, 28 days and this will be easy. And, like, same thing with going to the gym. Going to the gym for 28 days, it's going to be easy after that. So it may be hard for the first month, but after that, for the rest of your life, you're going to have a healthy habit that's now going to help you productively.
How do you handle self-discipline? What if it's day 25 and you just don't feel like
it's very hard. It's something that I'm still struggling with.
And the reason why I ask is because, I mean, you're juggling a fair bit for someone your age.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At some point, you have to be making yourself do things.
And, oh, yeah.
And that's a difficult thing for people to do, especially when they're creative-minded predominantly. Mm-hmm. So I'm always curious how people handle self-discipline in the journey of pushing the ball down the road.
Not easy. I've definitely dropped the ball a couple of times because of that. But it's something that my mom really helps push me. She's like my best friend through it all. So she definitely is like, Byron, you have orders. You have to get done tonight. I don't care if you're tired. Get up and do them.
Shout out to all the moms doing that.
Moms are the best, dude.
Yeah.
So it's definitely having people around me who help, open my eyes and like push me. But it's also one of those where you realize like you signed up to do this. It's something that you love doing. There may be parts you don't like, but you have to do the parts you don't like to do the parts you do like.
Mm.
And there was one time I had an order. It was like 300 hoodies, my biggest order ever, like at the time. And I was like, I don't want to do this. And it was like every night I was up to like 1 a.m. doing them. But it was like, I like this because this gets me to the point where I want to go. And my thing is, once you get to that mindset of, I have to do this now and I have to suffer for a little bit to get to the part where I love the most, that's going to be forever. Then it's like, okay, why complain about it now? Just get it done. And I usually set mini goals myself. This is like the biggest piece of advice. So if I have like 10 shirts make a night, but I know I could get the rest done in the morning, I'll say, okay, let's get 6 done tonight. Let's go a little bit over half. And then the morning you only have 4 to do. And then after 6, okay, let's go to bed. And after the 6 shirts, I go to bed. And then it's like, oh, well, you didn't do that much tonight. And then the morning it's like, no, well, now you have even less to do. And then it feels like the task was gone. So easy, but it's like, I got all 10 shirts done in a matter of a couple hours.
Mm. So it's a matter of playing enough of a head game with yourself.
I've always been one recently to plan ahead. So my thing is, if you plan far enough ahead where you can do that kind of stuff, the tasks become a lot easier to get knocked out.
Yeah, and it becomes a way you can couch it. You know, like you said, instead of feeling like I get to do 10 shirts at once, I could do 6 and then 4.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like you can pick up 100 pounds or you can pick up 10 pounds. And it's like same thing with a website. Websites are super hard to build. And it's like mine, I mean, there's, I think, 16, 17 pages on a website for me. So it's like I have to go in and custom build all those websites, take forever. So my thing is I could either sit down and for a couple of days try to build it all at once, or over the course of a month I could build a page here, and it gets done super easy and it's gone. So it's one of those where you just have to break your task up.
The other way to break up tasks is to eventually be able to delegate. Mm-hmm. Do you want to be able to do that sooner than later, or are you all the weight kind of feels good in a way?
It depends. Okay, so I'm very much a control freak when it comes to my business. I'm like, I want to know everything that's happening. I want to make every decision along the way. And I'm one of those where, like, if you want it done right, do it yourself. Like,
yeah.
I think it's the only thing I'm having to work on is delegating. And I love having, like, my close friends are the first people to be like, oh, if you need help with anything, let me know.
Right.
And they're amazing at me being like, hey, can you get this done? They do it. Because I know I trust them because I know that they do it the way I want. And same with my parents. But like, for the most part, I love doing it even as much as it is. But I would love eventually for like the things that I know anyone can do to have. Like, there's parts that I would always want to keep the weight on my shoulders for because I want to make sure that they're done to my standards. But there's also things like just like reaching out to manufacturers, ordering stuff. That I know I'm like, I could assign this to anyone in the world and they could get it done.
Mm.
And so eventually I would love to have a bigger team that I could delegate stuff to.
Yeah, I think you'd be good at that.
That's like everyone's dream is to have a team where you can just send out a list of what you need done and they do it.
I know, but it's like the control freak conundrum though.
Yeah, horrible.
Yeah, that's the dichotomy of that one. So I want to ask you one kind of loaded question and then we can get you out of here on something fun. It seems like you've had a bunch of times in your journey thus far where you could have been pretty scared, whether or not it's launching the first line or exposing any of the things that these have to do with you personally, or you got a 300 hoodie order, or whatever the case may be. These are chances where one could be definitely afraid. Mm-hmm. How do you balance points where you can naturally be afraid with the excitement?
I think another thing Mr. Elmendorf taught me was excitement and nerves are the exact same feeling. You can be nervous about something, but it's also excitement. It's the exact, your brain is telling the chemicals for excitement and nervous are the exact same thing. And fear, when you break it down, is just another form of nervousness because you're anxious about what's coming next. Because you're not, you're never scared of something. You're scared of what's going to happen. You're scared of the unknown.
Right.
And so my thing is, when you break it down to be like, oh, I'm just nervous about this, but I know I can do this because I've done something like this before, because I know I'll get through this because I've done so much before and I've got myself to this point. And I definitely think that also comes from a point of imposter syndrome, which I've struggled with severely growing up. Definitely, I think being an entrepreneur at my age, I've always had people be like, oh, no, you're too young for this.
Right.
And that is the most annoying thing in the world, is to be undermined for my age. But the point is, I've got myself to this point. I wasn't born into this. I pushed myself to this point. So I'm like, if anyone could do this, it's me, because they trusted me to do this and I've done something like this. People, like for the 300 shirt order, a business isn't going to give you like $8,000 because they just think you have a vision.
You're right.
They're going to give you $8,000 because they know that you can do this, because they've seen you do stuff like this before. So, I mean, me personally, I'm not going to give some 14-year-old $8,000 and be like, hey, do this. But, like, if I've seen, oh, this 14-year-old's put out work that I like, okay, here you go. And as soon as I get to that point, I'm like, oh, well, I've done stuff like this before, and I can do it, and I have people around me, then it's like, why be scared of something that it's in the end going to be something that's really something I'm proud of and I'm positive about, and it's a stepping stone to get to where I want to go.
And is that something that you have a mental practice of reminding yourself in real time when that happens?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I'm constantly having to, like, take breaks and, like, I can do this. Another thing is when I get really stressed out, I always end up having to walk away because I will, like, spiral. So, and that has to do with being nervous and being scared of, you know, what if I fail? I remember a perfect example of that has to do with the order, the big order I was talking about. So another thing is, on top of that, a couple weeks later, they ended up ordering, like, 50 hoodies or something. And it was for an event that was, like, 3 days later. Well, this was right around the hurricane that happened last year. And because of that, the prints I ordered for the hoodies came in late. And they came in, like, the night before the event.
Oh.
And I was, like, I was literally freaking out. And I had, like, a panic attack. So I was, like, everyone's going to hate me. Like, my career's over. Like, this is the end. And I remember my mom actually called the person, because it's a family friend who had ordered them. And we were talking to them. And they were, like, oh, like, it's fine. It is what it is. And once I was able to be like, oh, so no one's going to hate me, and I'm causing myself to spiral, and I was able to stop that, then I was like, oh, it's fine. I mean, at the end of the day, like, they're all waiting on a hoodie from me, so they're going to have to wait to get the product from me, and it is what it is. You can't control things you can't control.
Mm.
And if you let the things you have no control over affect you, then you're just going to spiral.
Yeah.
The best thing you can do is say, okay, I have control over this X, Y, and Z, and I'm going to put my intention towards those, and then whatever I don't have control over is going to run its course.
So I guess this question kind of answers itself, and then I'll ask you the fun one. But has this entrepreneurial journey, you think, taught you patience more so than anything else?
Yes and no. I definitely have had to learn patience, but I also hate being patient, dude.
Yeah?
I have a lot of stuff in the works, and I'm like, I just want to post about it now. Like, I already have the next collection pretty much finished, and I'll tell you about that. But I have my next big collection in a really long time done. It's been 7 months since I put out anything, so people are definitely anticipating it. I've had a lot of questions about it, but that's one of those where I've been so impatient this whole process of making it. I was like, I want it out now. The idea for this collection actually started a year and a half ago, because I've always wanted to do a Western collection. And this is the exclusive I was telling you about. So I finally sat down with one of my best friends, and it's my first ever collaboration. And I have my brand new collection coming out in the next 2 months. It's called Cowboy Killer.
Nice.
It's Western, and it's my biggest collection to date. I have a blush palette, which was like, I've never worked on anything besides lip gloss when it comes to makeup. So we have a blush palette, makeup brushes, singular blushes, highlighters, and then around 160 apparel products to go with it.
Dang.
It's a lot. And to go with all that, we may have been filming something the whole time that maybe a documentary that's coming out along with the collection. So that's been a lot to work on. But that's one of those where the patience has been like nowhere with that collection. I'm like, I want people to know about it now. I want to tell everyone about it. After we shot the cover, like I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was like, I want to post this today. I don't care when it comes out. I'm posting it now. But it's definitely something I've started to learn, that like the best things take a lot of time. And if I try to sit here and I rush through a collection, then it's not going to be the way I want it. And I think a prime example of that's actually my favorite collection, Code Blue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw one, but it's like my like every day I think about it. It's like my favorite piece of art I've ever made. It's the shortest collection I've ever made too. It was only 10 designs. But it was one of those where I was at a really dark time right after Retrograde. I was like, how do I follow up this collection? Because Retrograde in like hours had already hit four figures. Never had a collection do that. I was like, how do I follow this up? Like, I just did this. I spent months marketing it. Cost tons of money to make. What do I do next? So then I was like, let me do a space collection called Parallax. Well, after about a month, Parallax was going nowhere because making shirts about space that connect with people aren't easy. And that was one of those where I tried to force the idea so much that the collection wasn't coming together. And so I said, I'm going to make a collection. We're going to go back to the basics. I'm going to make a collection, see where it goes. Let's walk the line. And same thing about myself, because Retrograde had been planned out. Retrograde was like, I want to make a retro collection. I don't care what it takes. Retrograde had been a long time in the works, like 8 months. I was like, let's just see where it goes. With Code Blue, I was like, I'm going to have no idea going in, and we're going to do it. Right around this time, Billie Eilish's album Hit Me Hard and Soft came out. And I loved that underwater feel. And then I was making nothing, and then one night I was on the phone, and me and my friend made, we got into a design battle. Because I love to do it with my friends when I have no ideas. I'm like, we're going to pull a random topic. We have 5 minutes to make something.
That's cool.
And it's actually helped make some of my best designs. Same thing with my friend Bree. Is like, we'll do that, and then something comes out, and then the rest floods out. It's like, imagine like breaking a wall, and then the rest just kind of pours out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that, and I made a design called Checkmate. And then the other nine came out in the next 3 days. And then that's where like all my favorite designs came out of. But that was one of those where I had to be so patient with the process. Because there were many times where I'm like, I don't even know where this is going. And that was a good and bad thing. It was very exciting, but it was also very nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
And then as soon as we shot the cover, which was terrible, the worst cover I've ever shot, I was underwater for 3 hours. Imagine how my ears felt. I would like, and then after that, we went back to my studio and we shot, I think, for another like 4 or 5 hours, all the promos. I was like, oh my God, guys, I'm exhausted.
You're like, whose idea was this?
It was all mine.
Yeah, exactly.
I love photo shoots, but sometimes, dude, like, that was such a long, I think it was like 7 hours. After being in the water, I had the worst headache, and I had to go do like 8 other looks. I was like, oh my God. But that was one of those where, like, as soon as we shot the cover, I was like, I am so proud of this. I need this out now. So it's one of those where I think it's not as much as impatience. It's more of, I'm so proud of it. I just want to share it with everyone.
Yeah.
But I've definitely had to build patience with, like, for example, the new makeup in the new collection, Cowboy Killer. It took us 2 months to do the packaging because I never had to do that much packaging over the course of makeup. I've had to do one box before, and that was it. And now we're doing stickers, you know, shade names, inside of the palette, like, all, it was so much.
Yeah, way more than what you think it is.
Well, yeah, and it's also, how do I make everything different but feel cohesive? Mm. And that was super difficult. And we spent months on months making different drafts. And also working with someone else was a whole different story because Mackenzie has, that's my person I'm collaborating with, my best friend Mackenzie. She has no knowledge of makeup. She knows I own a business. She had no clue what I did. So bringing her behind the scenes and letting her see what we're doing and also while filming it all, totally different experience.
Right.
So I was so impatient throughout it all. Because I was like, I'm terrified of where this is going. With the makeup, I had to be patient because 2 months, and then we had another month of production, and it's supposed to be here in the next couple days, fingers crossed. Hopefully we don't get hit with the tariffs coming in. I'm praying. It's like $600 in tariffs if I do, so.
Ugh.
I know. I'm praying that I don't get hit with them, but yeah, it's one of those where there's parts where I'm impatient, parts where I'm patient. Especially with, I keep ranting about this, but the new collection, the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
I was terrified because we had started making it. And I'm very picky about designs of, like, when I have a saying for a shirt, I'm just going to take it wherever it goes and, like, let it run its course. And Mackenzie's a polar opposite. She's, like, one of those where if it starts going somewhere and she hates it, she's cutting it off there and starting on something else.
Mm.
So it was, like, how do we navigate working together? So eventually we were, like, why don't we just try working on the design separately and then come together at the end and let's critique each other. And then it was one of those where it was a very big learning process, but it was also, I had to be patient and trust it.
Yeah, the trust part.
Yeah, because I was like, well, this is all we have lined up, so we're going to have to hope it goes good. And then it ended up, I'm very proud of where this collection has came to. I'm really excited for people to see. I do think this could become my best-selling collection, fingers crossed.
Very cool. Well, I got one more question before your fun one then. What opened the door to doing cosmetics? Because from a production standpoint, and this came to my mind when you were talking about just the amount of design that goes into it, this is a completely different can of worms from garments. and in some cases a lot more involved, I would imagine. What prompted you to do that? That was just like the goal and you were pushing towards that and you're just going to bite off another chunk to chew because we've already got a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to do makeup. I mentioned that earlier. It's like, makeup's always been the end goal because I've always found makeup so... It's such a beautiful art form. Like, the fact that we can make something and then other people can interpret it into making another piece of art with it. Like, it's just something I've always thought was just life-changing to me. I've always been like, this is so cool. And I've also grown up always watching makeup. So then when I started being able to wear it and then explore that, I was like, this is a really cool avenue. And so when I was eventually like, well, why don't we start with lip gloss? I remember where I was too. I was at Tom Bennett Park in Bradenton, sitting on a swing with my friend at the time. And I was like, I think I'm going to do lip gloss. Because there's a brand out there called Boss Up Cosmetics. If you're watching, I literally love you. Like, my dream to be you. But she was 11. She started a lip gloss brand. She's now 19 and, like, one of the most successful self-made people I've ever seen. She's so down to earth. She's so hardworking. Awesome. And she has built a multi-million dollar lip gloss brand all by herself in her house.
Awesome.
To the point where she invented the color-changing lip oils. And she has sold, I think to this point, she sold 700,000 of them. Just on TikTok.
Wow.
But watching her, like, I've been watching her since she had, like, 10,000 followers. Now she has a couple million. And I was like, she makes it look easy, so I should try. And if it fails, then it fails. Because nobody knows this, but a bath myself was supposed to have candles with it. I've always wanted to do something with clothes, because I've always felt like the clothes weren't interesting enough. So I was like, let me do something with it. So then when we did the lip gloss for Retrograde, the lip gloss was an immediate hit. Everyone was like, oh, well, I mean, your shirts are okay, but the lip gloss, it's affordable. And I love it. I mean, we have people who don't even wear makeup who try lip gloss and they're like, this is like the best thing I've ever put on my lips.
Awesome.
Because it's a completely different formula than what most people are used to.
Mm-hmm.
And also the biggest thing is, I think what really pushed me is I've obviously grown up as a guy wearing makeup. Not a lot of, I mean, obviously now there's a lot more representation than there was, but there's always a lot of stigmatism on that.
Right.
And I was like, how can I be a part of the change? And I was like, well, then I have to put my money where my mouth is and let's make a product that's actually inclusive. So, and also like looking up to brands like Patrick Ta, One Size Beauty, I was like, I aspire to be them because they're making a change, so I want to do it too. So then after 7 months of researching and working on the lip glosses, we finally did them. And then after that, I was like, let's do lip oils next because I want to do something different. And then eventually like eyeshadow palettes, all that's always been the goal. And we may or may not be working on a couple right now, but eventually it was like, let me just see where this goes. And then it just started scaling and scaling. And now we have like 22 shades of lip oil and then the whole blush collection. And then we have, you know, lip stains coming out later this year. And then maybe a couple eyeshadow palettes and mascaras maybe in the works.
So that begs the question that every time you get something done or you feel like you've accomplished something, is it immediately, is your next thought immediately what I'm going to do next? Do you ever spend any time even reveling in what you've done a little bit, or is it always, okay, we got 2 lip oils out, that means we can make it to 22? Is everything always the next thing as soon as you hit a point, a checkpoint?
See, I like to say no. My mom would probably kill me if I said that, though, because I'll be working on one collection. Like, so in 3 years, we're going to do this. And she always gets mad when I add more stuff to my plate because she sees how burnt out I get.
Yeah, that's why I asked about the cosmetics. Like, we'll just bite off another thing. Yeah. And I know that was the goal, but I mean, you had a lot going already.
Oh, it's definitely something, but it's more one of those where I'm like, I have gotten to the point where I'm able to keep building the life that I've always dreamed of. And I'm like, I don't have time to slow down now. Like, I will slow down when I'm in the ground.
Good.
It's time, like, I mean, to get where you want, you have to work hard. And it sucks and it's miserable sometimes. But, like, I don't know how to describe the feeling of, like, when I see someone, like, trying to make up and be like, I've always hated makeup growing up, and this just changed my opinion. It is, like, it makes me want to cry just thinking. It's, like, the most life-changing moment to realize that something I made in my house changed someone's perspective. And so it's one of those where I'm like, I don't care how much work it takes. I don't care how many hours I miss of sleep. I'm going to do it because it's what I love doing. And it's one of those where I think you can have a love-hate relationship with your job no matter how much you like it.
Yeah.
And I definitely think you can relate to this too, of like doing anything creative or like anything entrepreneurship, it is a lot of work. And it is a lot of, you are on the clock 24/7. And when I finally did a presentation of this recently where I showed all my friends like how much actually goes in my job, and they were all like, I will never ever give you crap about it ever again.
Yeah, right.
Because they're always like making fun. They're like, oh, it can't be that hard. Like, I work a 9-to-5. I'm like, try never clocking out. Like, I will literally, like, one in the morning, wake up and have to go work on something or, like, be answering emails. And I'm like, girl, get on my level. Like,
yeah.
But it's one of those where I love what I do. And I also think there are harder, like, working people out there, like, a lot harder working people out there than me. So my thing is, if they can do it, I can do it too. Because, like, I mean, I always use the example of Taylor Swift. I'm a huge Swiftie. And the girl's put out, like, 7 albums, the biggest tour in history, like, all that in the span of 6 years. Like, if she can do that, I can put out a collection. Like, it can't be that hard. So it's definitely something also with time, like, in the beginning, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't understand the process. What do I do next? Now it's like, oh, I understand I have to do this, 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 and this to get the collection out. So it's more of, like, I just have to make sure I have enough time. And on Cowboy Killer, I will say, we are very, you'll see in the documentary, we are very behind schedule, which is very stressful. But, yeah, it's...
Well, what fun would it be if everything went according to plan?
Yeah, I think, like, we also learn from having those challenging moments. Because then I'm like, oh, well, we're never going to be late behind schedule again. That's not happening, so...
Well, just like you said, though, and if for any reason you do end up behind schedule again, you're not going to have to sweat it. You already lived through it once.
Exactly. So it's one of those where it's like, this is just a learning moment. And then, I mean, I'll get through it. The collection has come out at some point eventually. So, I mean, we have a projected launch date. But the only reason I'm not saying it is because depending on how everything goes with the photo shoots coming up, we may have to push it back by a week or two, which I really don't want to do. But, I mean, if this comes out on the right date, this will be the first time ever a collection's come out on the right date. So, believe it or not, every collection before has came out on a different date than what we planned for. Fun fact, actually, if you look at my retrograde teaser video, I'm in a blue jersey that says 24 on it. And the reason for that is that jersey was custom made because... The collection was supposed to come out on the 24th. And then after we shot that promo, we had to move it to the 31st.
But it was still 2024?
Yeah. That's not we used it for that.
Perfect.
So, yeah, no, like, all that stuff has always been... I mean, even with Code Blue, the jersey I wore says 30. And it's because it's supposed to come out on the 30, and we had to move it to the 31st, too. Which I also thought was a cute thing, though, because Retrograde came out on the 31st, and then Code Blue came out on the 31st. But it's one of those where launch dates are never... At this point, I don't try playing them. I'm like, okay, we'll hopefully launch on this day. We'll see how it goes, though. I just project it at this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to be able to live and learn at some point. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Well, now we're going to ask you your fun one, and then we can get you out of here. If you could stylize anyone, tip to toe, for any event, be it a performance or a gala or whoever, living or dead, who would it be and where are they going? What are they doing?
Ooh, this is hard, because I'd say, like, okay, so, like, my biggest idol in the world is, if you can tell, Billie Eilish. But this is hard. I'd probably say either Billie Eilish or Sabrina Carpenter. I'm a huge music nerd. Easily, they'd be going to the Met Gala. I'm obviously a fashion nerd, too. The Met Gala's happening right now.
That's partly what made me think of it.
Yeah. So, Dream would be the 2016 theme camp. Which is, like, something super iconic, like, you just can't forget about it. And for Billie, easy, because remember when she had her green roots?
Mm-hmm.
I would style her in, like, this giant black, like, super long tulle dress. Like, we're talking, like, yards, like, hundreds of yards long. Like, take up the entire carpet. And I want it to be layers of green and black so it peeks through. And I want it to just be, like, the most, like, flashiest, just, like, people are like, what is this?
Yeah.
Just because I want it to grab people's attention. For Sabrina... She wore a dress, actually, which is, like, my dream dress I would have styled her in, which was a Bob Mackie archive. It was, like, the silver, like, corset dress, and I was like, that's you. There you go. That's what I would have styled her in. Like,
yeah, but, that's classic.
Oh, yeah, no, you can ask them. Anytime a red carpet happens, any kind of event, the Grammys, Oscars, I pull up the next day, I'm like, okay, this outfit could have been with this. It should have been, it's missing this, like, wrong color. I'm, like, critiquing all the outfits because I'm a huge fashion nerd when it comes to that.
I love it. Well, Byron, I can't thank you enough for reaching out and coming down here and sharing some of your story. And I usually say to people, well, if you have something going on again, but you, I'm going to say, when your next thing's going on and you want to come see us again, you've always got a home here. I appreciate you coming down so much.
Of course. Thank you so much. I had a great time.
Yeah. Appreciate it.